presidential election and called for suspension of America's constitution. The Biden White House has strongly criticized Donald Trump for calling for the termination of the constitution. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. CNN has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump has called for the termination of the U.S. Constitution's rules regarding elections to overturn the results of the disputed 2020 presidential election, following the emergence of evidence that social media sided with the Washington establishment to suppress negative reports about Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, ahead of the election. Donald Trump said on Saturday, 3rd of December, the founding fathers of the United States did not want fraudulent elections in the country. Elon Musk released what he called the Twitter files on Friday, 2nd of December, delving into the company's decision to block the Hunter Biden laptop story. The post focused on the controversy surrounding Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, and Twitter's reaction limiting the spread of posts about it. It was billed as a bombshell that exposed how Twitter engaged in free speech suppression in the critical run-up to the 2020 presidential election. Trump said in a Truth Social post, "A massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. Our great founders did not want and would not condone false and fraudulent elections." Donald Trump said the revelations show massive and widespread fraud and deception from Big Tech, the Democratic National Committee, and the Democratic Party, asking if the 2020 presidential election results should be thrown out and he should be declared the winner, or if a new election should be held. Trump believes that the election was rigged by the U.S. establishment in favor of Joe Biden. He has said that the 2020 presidential election was the greatest election hoax in history. He previously accused Twitter and Facebook of helping Joe Biden to win the election. Pulitzer Prize-winning American investigative journalist Glenn Greenwald has revealed that an axis of the CIA, big technology firms, and the Democratic National Committee, allied wing of the corporate media, spread an absolute lie in the weeks before the 2020 presidential election to help Joe Biden win the vote. British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. The Biden White House rebuked Donald Trump after the former president said the U.S. Constitution should be terminated over his claim that the 2020 election was stolen. Andrew Bates, a White House spokesperson, said, "Attacking the Constitution and all it stands for is anathema to the soul of our nation and should be universally condemned." Andrew Bates called the Constitution a sacrosanct document, saying, "You cannot only love America when you win." Donald Trump lost to Joe Biden in 2020 by more than 7 million votes and by 306 to 232 in the Electoral College count, a result he called a landslide when it was in his favor in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump continues to say that Joe Biden won key states through electoral fraud, a claim that fueled the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January 2021. 9 deaths have been linked to the riot in the Capitol building, including law enforcement suicides. More than 950 people have been charged. Recently, 2 members of the far-right Oath Keepers militia were convicted of seditious conspiracy. Other members of far-right, pro-Trump groups face similar charges. Donald Trump was banned from Facebook and Twitter after a Capitol attack. He has not yet returned to the latter, despite his new owner, Elon Musk, saying he's free to do so. Donald Trump is the only declared candidate for a Republican nomination in 2024, but he has faced increasing criticism from within the Republican ranks and Republican supporting media since midterm elections in which many of his endorsed candidates were defeated, including election deniers in battleground states. Republicans took the House of Representatives, but only by a narrow margin, and failed to retake the U.S. Senate. On Saturday, 3rd of December, Donald Trump also criticized the Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and all of the weak Republicans who couldn't get the presidential election of 2020 approved and out of the way fast enough. Even after the Capitol riot, 147 Republicans objected to results in key states. Senior Republicans have also criticized Donald Trump over his decision to have dinner at his home in Florida with Nick Fuentes, a known white supremacist and anti-Semite. The website Politico has also covered the same story. Representative Liz Cheney, Republican of Wyoming, called former President Donald Trump an enemy of the Constitution on Sunday, 4th of December, after Trump suggested considering terminating the Constitution on Saturday, 3rd of December, the most overt condemnation in the GOP of Donald Trump's words. Liz Cheney tweeted, "No honest person can now deny that Trump is an enemy of the Constitution." Other Republicans joined Cheney in being critical of the idea of the Constitution being set aside, but they declined to say whether they'd vote for Donald Trump again after the statement. Representative Mike Turner, a Republican from Ohio, said, "It is certainly not consistent with the oath that we all take. I vehemently disagree with the statement from Donald Trump that Donald Trump has made." But Turner, speaking to host Margaret Brennan on CBS's Face the Nation program, declined to say Donald Trump's remarks were disqualifying when it came to his presidential candidacy. Turner said, "There is a political process that has to go forward." On Saturday, 3rd of December, Brian Schatz, a Democratic U.S. senator from Hawaii, pointed to such hard political reality, saying, "Trump just called for the suspension of the Constitution, and this is the final straw for zero Republicans, especially the ones who call themselves constitutional conservatives." One such conservative is Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader battling to become House Speaker. Not long before Donald Trump said the Constitution should be terminated, Kevin McCarthy said that when his party took control in January, it would demonstrate its constitutional bona fides by reading every single word of the hallowed document on the floor of the House. On Sunday, 4th of December, Hakeem Jeffries, the newly elected Democratic leader in the House, told ABC's This Week program Trump had made a strange statement, but the Republicans are going to have to work out their issues with the former president and decide whether they're going to break from him and return to some semblance of reasonableness or continue to lean in to extremism, not just of Donald Trump, but of Trumpism. On the same show, Dave Joyce of Ohio, chair of the Moderate Republican Governance Group, refused five opportunities to say he would not vote for Donald Trump if he was the nominee in 2024. John Bolton, George W. Bush's United Nations ambassador who became Donald Trump's third national security advisor, said, "No American conservative can agree with Donald Trump's call to suspend the Constitution because the results of the 2020 election. And all real conservatives must oppose his 2024 campaign for president."
The wildfires in Greece Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin has said the country is building a more lethal force posture in the Indo-Pacific as part of efforts to make sure China doesn't dominate the region the way it intends to. Addressing the Reagan National Defense Forum, Austin said China is the only country with both the will and increasingly the power to reshape its region and the international order. He added that Washington will not let that happen. The Pentagon chief added that the next few years will set the terms of the U.S. competition with the People's Republic of China, saying Beijing will shape the future of security in Europe. Referring to the modernization of the country's military force, he said that the U.S. is aligning its budget as never before to China challenge.
We're aligning our budget as never before to the China challenge. We're making the department's largest investment ever in R&D. And forging stronger capabilities. And we're modernizing training and equipping the U.S. military contingencies in the Indo-Pacific.
He went on to say one of the meanings of deterrence is sea power, announcing that the Pentagon is investing in the new construction of 9 battle force ships and Columbia-class ballistic missile submarines. Last month, one of Washington's Ford-class nuclear-powered carriers made its first transit to Europe. Austin also noted that the Pentagon is concerned about Russia and remains committed to arming Ukraine while avoiding escalating that conflict into a U.S. war with Moscow. However, he said between the two nuclear power threats, China remains the greater risk. The Pentagon has also unveiled B-21 Raider, its first new strategic bomber in more than 30 years.
The B-21 Raider is the first strategic bomber in more than 3 decades. It is a testament to America's enduring advantages in ingenuity and innovation. And it's proof of the department's long-term commitment to building advanced capabilities that will fortify America's ability to deter aggression today and into the future.
The nuclear-capable Batwing plane is being designed to best the quickly growing cyber, space, and nuclear capabilities of Beijing. The bomber is part of a major nuclear triad overhaul underway that the Congressional Budget Office has estimated will cost $1.2 trillion through 2046. It includes the Raider serving as the backbone of the future airleg of the triad, but it also requires modernizing the nation's Silo-launched nuclear intercontinental ballistic missiles and its nuclear submarine fleet. The comments by Austin amount to a new warning shot to President Xi Jinping, even as the U.S. looks to establish what it calls guardrails and keep tension with China from spiraling out of control. The Pentagon released its annual report last week on China, which said the Asian nation has doubled its number of nuclear warheads in a fraction of time the U.S. expected it to. China could have roughly 1,500 nuclear warheads by 2038, which are far less than what the United States possesses right now. The U.S. maintained 5,550 nuclear warheads as of December 1st of this year. But U.S. military officials keep claiming that China will soon surpass Russia as the top nuclear threat to the United States, warning that the two nuclear powers have no mechanisms to avoid miscommunication. China has reportedly accelerated the expansion of its nuclear arsenal due to a change in the country's assessment of the threat posed by the U.S. The U.S. Defense Department has the largest discretionary budget of all the federal agencies, and it may receive up to $847 billion in the 2023 budget if Congress passes the current funding bill before this legislative session ends. In a recent meeting with its Chinese counterpart, Austin said he made it clear that the United States will will continue to fly, sail, and operate wherever international law allows. On the other hand, China's defense minister said Taiwan is at the center of the country's core interests and is a red line the U.S. should not cross. He added that the issue has nothing to do with external forces and is for Chinese people to decide. Washington and Beijing have held war games and traded jabs since a visit to Taiwan by the U.S. House Speaker in August. China claims Taiwan as part of its territory. It has harshly criticized Washington's ties with Taipei as interference in its internal affairs. The two Western and Eastern powerhouses currently disagree on just about every major issue. From human rights, Taiwan, the Ukraine war, North Korea, and the transfer of technology to the shape and naming of the map.
Protesters in the Persian Gulf island of Bahrain. They're chanting death to Israel. Their reason: the Israeli President Isaac Herzog was visiting the Persian Gulf island, the first Israeli president visiting Bahrain. The day before, protesters carried signs with Herzog's image that said criminal and you are not welcome in Bahrain. Opposition activists launched a campaign on social media speaking out against normalization with Israel. But why was Herzog visiting Bahrain in the first place? And why was there such opposition to his visit? As for the reason of his visit, it was at the invitation of King Hamad bin Isa al-Khalifa. It is reported that he will meet with members of the local Jewish community and senior government officials. He will also lead a group of Israeli business people to meet with the Bahraini Economic Development Board. But these things could be done by other officials from Israel. It wouldn't need the Israeli president to make a trip to Bahrain for that, unless there are other reasons for the visit. For starters, Israel needs to maintain a high-profile presence when it comes to its relationship with Persian Gulf Arab leaders. This is crucial for Israel as part of the so-called normalization process. Israel normalized ties with the UAE and Bahrain in 2020 as part of the U.S.-brokered Abraham Accords. The agreement paved the way for the normalization with Morocco months later. But the U.S.-led process has not taken off quite the way the U.S. and Israel intended to. For although the leaders of Israel and UAE and Bahrain may have gotten closer, the population of these Arab countries have displayed anger and animosity towards Israel, as was evidenced in the World Cup in Qatar. The reason for this amount of anger toward Israel is very clear: Palestine and Palestinians.
What is this?
Israel Channel. You don't like us?
You are not welcome here. There is only Palestine.
Israel's continued repression and violation of Palestinian rights throughout the decades has been met with some Arab leaders engaging with Israel for the so-called Abraham Accords. For their citizens, this is unacceptable and a betrayal of the Palestinian cause. It appears that the Abraham Accords have become a substitute for improving the lives of Palestinians. Bahrain has been experiencing an uprising since the beginning of 2011, although the island itself has seen government opposition due to the marginalization of the Shia population itself. Since the uprising, which has continued until this day, the government has been relentless in violating the rights on a vast number of issues. Torture, illegal detentions, sham trials, and death sentences are just some of the examples of the repression of the Bahrainis. Yet despite these human rights violations, the West, in particular the U.S. and its allies, have turned a blind eye to these violations, just like they have done when it comes to Saudi Arabia. Bahrain saw the so-called normalization as a way of strengthening its close relations with the U.S. and its position in Washington, especially among the pro-Israel community, in order to bolster American support for Bahrain and deflect criticism of the kingdom's human rights record. Bahrain also hosts the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet and U.S. Naval Forces Central Command. As such, it is well aware that the rights of Bahrainis is being violated, yet the U.S. chooses to do nothing about it. Israel is clearly the biggest beneficiary of the Abraham Accords. Israel's military is deepening its cooperation with the militaries of Bahrain and the UAE under the umbrella of the U.S. This was pretty evident when all four held their first naval exercise last November in the Red Sea. This all comes down to Israel further undercutting regional support for the Palestinians. Let's not forget, an American official who helped broker the Abraham Accords admitted that their entire aim was to isolate the Palestinians, to put them on, quote, an island. He said the plan was that if we get everybody around the Palestinians to recognize Israel, then where does that leave the Palestinians? They will have to come because they are on an island. 2 years after the Abraham Accords were signed, this is what it has brought Palestinians. Death, execution style.
The U.S. president said on Thursday that he would be willing to speak to Vladimir Putin if he truly wants to end the war. That was the first time he had expressed willingness to speak with the Russian leader since the beginning of the war in February, around which time he said that he will not be speaking with Putin. He made his comments as he was delivering a speech at a joint White House news conference with French President Emmanuel Macron. Here's what he said about the war in Ukraine and the unrealistic conditions under which he would speak to Putin.
Look, there's one way for this war to end, the rational way. Putin to pull out of Ukraine, number one. But it appears he's not going to do that. But the fact of the matter is, I have no immediate plans to contact Mr. Putin. Mr. Putin is, choose my words very carefully. I'm prepared to speak with Mr. Putin if, in fact, there is an interest in him deciding he's looking for a way to end the war. He hasn't done that yet.
Biden further added, if that's the case, in consultation with my French and my NATO friends, I'll be happy to sit down with Putin to see what he has in mind, as he and Macron vowed long-term support for Ukraine. The Kremlin took note of Biden's comments and responded through its spokesman, Dmitry Peskov. He said that Putin remains open to negotiations, but he is not going to pull his troops out of Ukraine. Peskov emphasized another unrealistic condition that Biden had set for talking with Putin. That would be the West's refusal to recognize the quote-unquote new territories that Russia annexed during the controversial September referendums. All that said, Peskov was not dismissive of the potentiality of talks between the two superpowers. While outlining Russia's conditions for the talks, he said, President Putin has been, is, and remains open for contacts for negotiations. Of course, the most preferable way to achieve our interests is through peaceful diplomatic means. While it is difficult to assess both parties' actual willingness to talk, what is objectively true is the fact that President Biden had not expressed any willingness to sit down with Putin with or without the unrealistic conditions he set. Could it be that the very difficult winter ahead of Ukraine and the rest of Europe is making the West reconsider negotiating with Putin? While President Biden was playing fast and loose with the idea of holding peace talks and simultaneously setting unrealistic prerequisites for it, President Macron expressed a more dovish tone by simply saying, I will continue to talk to President Putin, as he called for efforts, quote, to prevent escalation and to achieve concrete results. Macron also stated that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has also shown, quote-unquote, real willingness to pursue peace. Elsewhere in Europe, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz spoke with President Putin on the phone and urged the Russian leader to find a diplomatic solution to the war as soon as possible. Scholz also called for the Russian troops to fully withdraw from Ukraine, an unlikely scenario to unfold. Putin told Scholz on the phone that Germany and the entire Western Bloc's approach towards Ukraine was destructive, as he called on Scholz to rethink his approach. It is unclear whether or not Germany, France, or the U.S. would initiate peace talks with Russia, but it seems that, at the very least, they are leaving the option on the table, despite some major disagreements between the two sides on the prerequisites for the talks. Something that was expected to hurt the potentiality of peace talks, but doesn't seem to now, is the price cap that was going to be imposed on Russian oil by the G7, EU, and Australia. They have, in fact, imposed the price cap at $60 per Russian crude oil barrel, but the amount is actually well above what Russian oil is trading for right now. This means that Russian oil will still flow and that the West has not been able to find an alternative source to Russian oil, as Russia is still the major oil provider for the countries setting the price cap. The chair of Russian Lower House's Foreign Affairs Committee, Leonid Slutsky, believes that the price cap will only end up jeopardizing EU's energy security as the world waits to see how Russia will react to the move.
The UN General Assembly has voted in favor of a pro-Palestinian resolution to commemorate the Nakba, or Catastrophe Day, which marks the Israeli regime's claiming existence in 1948. The Assembly adopted the resolution with 90 votes in favor, 30 negative votes, and 47 abstentions. The initiative was sponsored by Egypt, Jordan, Senegal, Tunisia, Yemen, and the Palestinians, and was approved despite the opposition of the US, UK, and Israel, and most European Union countries. 47 states abstained. The UN resolution calls for a, quote, commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the Nakba, including by organizing a high-level event at the General Assembly Hall in May 2023. The resolution also urges the dissemination of relevant archives and testimonies. Nakba Day, or Day of Catastrophe, falls on May 15 of each year. The date commemorates events that led to the Israeli regime forcibly expelling hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from their homes in order to make way for the Israeli settlers 74 years ago.
Negatively today, in the absence of a just solution, 75 years since the General Assembly's decision to partition historic Palestine with the adoption of Resolution 181 Roman II and the prolongation of Israel's occupation, now for over 55 years, the Palestinian people, including the Palestine refugees, continues to experience increasing levels of dispossession, displacement, violence, human rights violations, and insecurity.
The General Assembly also adopted other resolutions on the question of Palestine. They called for an immediate halt to settlement activities, land confiscation and home demolitions, the release of prisoners, and an end to arbitrary detentions.
The ongoing expansion of by Israel by the occupying power of illegal settlements in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem, and the attendant settler violence, which is also on the rise, need decisive action. These illegal actions constitute grave breaches of international law and are a flagrant obstruction of the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination.
Separately, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution regarding the Syrian Golan Heights, which the Israeli regime has been occupying for more than half a century. The resolution has demanded the withdrawal of the regime from that area. It called on Israel to implement the resolutions of the Security Council and to withdraw from the Golan to the line of June 4, 1967. On Thursday, Israeli forces killed two Palestinians during a raid near the city of Jenin in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. Before raiding Jenin, Israeli forces attacked the town of Yabad, southwest of Jenin, and killed a 22-year-old man there. This is not an isolated act of violence against Palestinians. Israeli occupation forces have ramped up military activity in the West Bank, killing more Palestinians during the past months. Since the start of 2022, Israeli troops have killed more than 200 Palestinians, including more than 50 children in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip. That is the highest record of killings since the year 2006.
In 2022, we have witnessed a dangerous escalation in Israeli military raids across the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem, leading to the killing and injury of more civilians, including women and children.
And none of the soldiers have been investigated to any of the crimes. This is a clear indication how the policy of the coming Israeli cabinet will be: more killings and more aggression.
Israeli officials have described the security situation in the occupied West Bank as dangerous. They've even suggested that the regime could face another intifada or uprising. Palestinians have vowed to respond against Israel's acts of aggression. On November 23, two separate explosions rocked two bus stations at the entrance of occupied Al-Quds. The blasts were in response to a long period of ongoing Israeli oppression of the Palestinian people. The tensions come as Israel is about to have one of the most extreme right-wing cabinets in the coming weeks. The cabinet, which is headed by Benjamin Netanyahu, is controversial due to the controversial Israeli politicians who have been mired in corruption and controversies.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
It seems that UK businesses are facing a merry Christmas. According to reports, almost half of British consumers are planning to reduce spending for the holiday season. With the UK heading into recession, colder weather setting in, and the energy price guarantee increasing in April, consumers will only face further financial pressures in the new year. In this regard, we have taken a look at World Media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT had an eye on this issue, writing, British retailers are bracing for a gloomy Christmas season as the worsening cost of living crisis weighs on household spending, two separate surveys showed recently. According to a monthly snapshot of spending by Barclays Card, which accounts for half of debit and credit card transactions, 50% of consumers were planning to tighten their belt this Christmas, cutting back on presents, food and socializing. Rising petrol and supermarket costs continue to bite, but Brits are spending less on energy bills as government support kicks in and people find ways to economize at home. Esme Harwood, a director at Barclays Card, said, adding, consumers continue to slop big nights out for cozy evenings in as they reduce their discretionary spending, while health and beauty and home improvements enjoy a little boost. The study found that 2 in 3 consumers, about 66%, were finding ways to save energy at home to reduce the cost of their gas and electricity. Many of those were wearing more layers at home, 63%, while 56% were avoiding the use of central heating unless absolutely necessary. One in five, about 20%, bought an electric blanket or hot water bottle, and almost a quarter, about 23%, were buying or already using an air fryer to help reduce the cost of cooking. Another survey by the British retail consortium BRC shows that spending at major stores in October was 1.6% higher than a year earlier, slowing from 2.2% in September and representing a big drop in the volume of purchases once inflation was taken into account. Christmas will come later than last year for many, and there may be more gloom than glitter as families focus on making ends meet, particularly as mortgage payments rise, BRC Chief Executive Helen Dickinson said. The BRC survey found that spending on food in the 3 months to October soared by 5.1% compared with a year earlier, while non-food spending dropped by 1.2%. With the festive season around the corner, we are likely to see further cutbacks as Brits rein in their Christmas spending. Consumers are adopting a restrained approach to festivities, reaching for pre-loved gifts and setting spending limits to manage their costs during this traditionally expensive time of year, Harwood explained. Also, according to the website of thisside.com, research shows that nearly half of consumers say they plan to cut back this festive season due to the rising cost of living, as the numbers missing payments remain alarmingly high. The latest findings from this website, Consumer Insight Tracker, show that millions of people across the UK will be spending less this Christmas due to financial pressures. The Consumer Champions research has also found that the number of households missing vital mortgage, rent, bill and credit card payments and cutting back on essentials is still roaring high. Nearly half, about 46% of UK consumers, plan to cut costs this Christmas. Gifts are one of the ways people plan to spend less. 4 in 10, about 41% of consumers, told reporters that they plan to cut back on buying fewer gifts this year, while a third, about 33%, said they would buy cheaper gifts, and a quarter, about 26%, said they would take advantage of promotions or discounts to save money on gifts. The money-saving tactics went beyond gift buying, with 3 in 10, about 30% of consumers say they would buy cheaper or less food to have at home over the Christmas period, and a quarter, about 23%, saying they would simply stay at home more to save money. Many households said the rising cost of living was the reason for reduced spending. A 21-year-old woman from Southwest said, "The cost of living is ridiculous. I can barely afford to support myself. Why would I waste money on Christmas when I can use it to survive?" Some have made a conscious decision as a family to spend less money this year. A 27-year-old woman from East Midland said, "I have less spare money this Christmas than I would normally have. I have had to pay a number of large bills in the last few weeks. I think most of my family and those I celebrate Christmas with are in the same boat as well, so it's a bit of agreement that Christmas this year will be quieter and less frivolous." Lisa Ann Campbell, 46, from Hertfordshire, has had to drastically cut back on her Christmas spend this year. Rising energy bills and food costs means that buying presents for friends and the wider family circle is no longer available. Lisa Ann has been putting money aside for the last few months so that her two young children do not go without. Doing the Christmas food shop is also a worry. Lisa Ann has epilepsy and no longer drives. Her nearest supermarket within walking distance is a smaller convenience store. It is often a struggle to find any products from budget ranges, she said. Costs are astronomical. I don't have the heating on to save as much money as I can. I'm only buying Christmas presents for my two little children this year. I have also cut back on Christmas costs by buying second-hand gifts, refurbished electronics, and shopping during the Black Friday sales. Even among the 1 in 10, about 8% of people who said they would be spending more, in many cases, this was driven by increases in prices and not a conscious decision to splash out over the festive season. A 59-year-old man from Scotland said, "I'm spending more because the cost of everything has increased, from prices of items to postage. I'm not buying any more than previous years, even, but it's still more expensive." Businesses across the UK are also facing pressure due to soaring inflation, but there is a lot they can do to help make consumers' lives better and more affordable in 2023 and beyond. The Consumer Champions calls to business aim to ensure that people have access to the best value products and services across the UK. For example, supermarkets should increase availability of own brand budget ranges in the supermarkets, particularly in low-income areas. It is also calling on companies to provide transparent pricing for groceries and essential services and asking telecoms and energy firms to make sure their customer service departments are properly resourced to cope with an expected surge in demand. Rocio Khanna, Director of Policy and Advocacy, said, "Our research has found that millions of households up and down the country are planning to cut back this Christmas due to the rising cost of living. With prices only predicted to keep rising in 2023, it is calling on businesses to do all they can to support their customers through this extraordinary cost of living crisis across the UK. While government intervention is necessary, we also believe businesses across existential services can and should do more to help people."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. Today, we are seeing the outcomes of the intelligence and talents of those who were born in the 1990s, the young people and those who are making innovations and updates in various scientific and technological areas are allowing the country to rank among the top 4 or 5 countries in the world in a number of areas. These are the same people who were born in the 80s and the 90s. They are bearing fruit today. God willing, the Iranian nation will also witness the blessings of those born in the 2000s and 2010s, early 21st century. Which makes up most of you who are here today, in the future. Of course, there will be disruptions. Some problems exist which can create hindrances. So our first advantage is that we have good human resources.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The second advantage that we have is the forces of nature. Our country's nature. We have many resources in our country. The diversity of our country's natural resources is among the rarest in the world. In one of my speeches in this same Husseiniyah, I don't remember the statistics now. I remembered it that day because I had researched it. I mentioned that we make up 1% of the world's population. 1%. Now there are a few essential metals that are necessary for industries, and these essential metals are also available in our country. And they constitute 4 or 5% of the metals available in the world. This means that we have more percentage of natural resources in proportion to the size of our own population. I mentioned metals, but the same goes for our plant resources, our medicinal plants, and our mines. We are very wealthy in that sense.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Europe has accused the U.S. of profiting from war. EU officials attack Joe Biden over sky-high gas prices, weapon sales, and trade. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT noted, the impact of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine is harsher on the EU than on the US. European Council President Charles Michel has said, according to Michel, security ties between Brussels and Washington have strengthened since the outbreak of Russia-Ukraine conflict, in which the West is backing Kiev. There is unprecedented coordination on the war in Ukraine, he said in an interview with Italian newspaper Corriere della Sera recently. But apparently the same can't be said about economic cooperation, with the European Council head pointing out that the impact of the conflict on the US is not the same as on Europe. Things are easier for America because it is an exporter of energy resources and benefits from spiking gas and oil prices, while the EU has to pay a heavy price, he said. We are at a risk of an economic recession, the bloc's chief added. Michel explained, European industries pay more for energy and face competition from American ones. The European Council President was also asked if he felt betrayed by the Inflation Reduction Act, passed by the administration of President Joe Biden, which offers huge subsidies and tax breaks to green businesses. Fears have been expressed in Brussels that the scheme could end up luring European businesses to America due to much lower energy prices there. I wouldn't use this term, but I would have preferred another behavior from Washington. Michelle replied, but let's not be naive. The U.S., even under the current administration, prioritizes its own economic interests. Reciprocity and having a level playing field are essential for globalization to work, he said, expressing hope the EU will be able to engage with the US in the coming weeks to discuss mutual cooperation. A report by Politico in late November claimed Brussels was angry at the Biden administration for capitalizing on the fighting in Ukraine. The US is profiting from the conflict the most as they are selling more gas and at higher prices and because they are selling more weapons, one senior EU official told the outlet. Meanwhile, Politico wrote, Europe accuses US of profiting from war. EU officials attack Joe Biden over sky-high gas prices, weapon sales and trade. Top European officials are furious with Joe Biden's administration and now accuse the Americans of making a fortune from the war, while EU countries suffer. The fact is, if you look at it soberly, the country that is most profiting from this war is the US because they are selling more gas and at higher prices, and because they are selling more weapons, one senior official told Politico. The explosive comments backed in public and private officials, diplomats and ministers elsewhere, follow mounting anger in Europe over American subsidies that threaten to wreck European industry. The Kremlin is likely to welcome the poisoning of the atmosphere among Western allies. The senior EU official said, we are really at a historic juncture, arguing that the double hit of trade disruption from US subsidies and high energy prices risks turning public opinion against both the war effort and the transatlantic alliance. America needs to realize that public opinion is shifting in many EU countries. Another top official, the EU's chief diplomat, Joseph Borrell, called on Washington to respond to European concerns. Americans, our friends, take decisions which have an economic impact on us, he said in an interview with Politico. The US rejected Europe's complaints. The rise in gas prices in Europe is caused by Russia-Ukraine conflict and Putin's energy war against Europe, period, a spokesperson for Biden's National Security Council said. Exports of liquefied natural gas from the US to Europe increased dramatically and enabled Europe to diversify away from Russia, the NSC spokesperson claimed. The biggest point of tension in recent weeks has been Biden's green subsidies and taxes that Brussels says unfairly tilts trade away from the EU and threaten to destroy European industries. Despite formal objections from Europe, Washington has so far shown no sign of backing down. At the same time, the disruption caused by Russia-Ukraine conflict is tipping European economies into recession. With inflation rocketing and a devastating squeeze on energy supplies, threatening blackouts and rationing this winter. As they attempt to reduce their reliance on Russian energy, EU countries are turning to gas from the US instead. But the price Europeans pay is almost four times as high as the same fuel costs in America. Then there is the likely surge in orders for American-made military kits as European armies run short after sending weapons to Ukraine. It's all got too much for top officials in Brussels and other EU capitals. French President Emmanuel Macron said high US gas prices were not friendly, and Germany's economy minister has called on Washington to show more solidarity and help reduce energy costs. Ministers and diplomats based elsewhere in the bloc voiced frustration At The Way, Biden's government simply ignores the impact of its domestic economic policies on European allies. When EU leaders tackled Biden over high US gas prices at the G20 meeting in Bali last week, the American president simply seemed unaware of the issue, according to the senior official quoted recently. Other EU officials and diplomats agreed that American ignorance about the consequences for Europe was a major problem. The Europeans are discernibly frustrated about the lack of prior information and consultation, said David Kleeman of the Brueghel think tank. Officials on both sides of the Atlantic recognize the risks that the increasingly toxic atmosphere will have for the Western alliance. The bickering is exactly what Putin would wish for. The EU and US diplomats agreed.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahan Abbott, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The United States House of Representatives has announced an investigation into allegations of a secret deal to boost oil production between the administration of President Joe Biden and Saudi Arabia. Biden is accused of trying to arrange a deal with Riyadh to increase oil production ahead of the U.S. midterm elections last month. Conservative lawmakers say that could represent election manipulation. It's the first official probe announced since the Republicans won control of the House of Representatives. Many other controversial hearings are expected to follow, such as on the handling of the coronavirus, the withdrawal from Afghanistan, corruption allegations involving Biden's son, and others. Just as Democrats forced questionable investigations over the past 2 years, a now divided Congress will likely be preoccupied with partisan issues of often questionable importance to the average person.
In the end of neoliberalism, we're in a kind of age of disorder. And this is kind of the show that is being played out, is that people are just going to be disillusioned from politics entirely. And that's going to open up the potential of polarization, like wider polarization.
Pro-Trump representatives in the House have already introduced articles of impeachment against Biden over the family-related corruption allegations. Many are skeptical that Congress will devote enough time to meeting the widespread economic problems caused by record inflation and Western belligerence towards Russia, China, Iran, and others.
Now, let's still push through the agenda that's necessary to maintain the super rich or super rich and that no relief for the working class. And once again, points to the need for the urgency for the foundation for a new party and also ultimately a new system.
An irony is that Riyadh and the OPEC Plus oil production group ultimately ignored Biden's demands for more oil and instead voted to cut production. And despite the cuts, last month Biden still awarded Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman immunity for all cases involving the infamous murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Biden campaigned on holding bin Salman accountable, and his backtracking drew global condemnation. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
More than 1 year after the Taliban returned to power, a Gallup survey has found that almost all Afghans, or 98%, rate their lives poorly enough to be considered suffering. The survey shows that the situation is getting worse for Afghans, and they have fully lost hope that their future will be any better.
Absolutely. People are suffering, especially from joblessness, poverty, insecurity, and little access to their basic rights. Their life conditions were grim even before the Taliban takeover, but recently people's hardships have become even worse. Still, we are not sure